You're listening to The Perth Property Show, Australia's only weekly property podcast by West Australian experts for West Australian listeners. Catch your latest episode every Monday at 7 a.m.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Perth Property Show. My name's Trent Fleskins, your host as always, and every 3 months we get this man in the studio to give us a pulse on the market. He's the best man in the job to do that because he sees the most valuations. He has the most time spent assessing these valuations and understanding what's going on in the market. And he loves coming in here and we love having him. It's Brendan Ptolemy, Managing Director of Heron Todd White. How are you going, mate?
I'm great, Trent. Thanks again for having me in. And you're right, I love coming to have a chat. Thank you.
Mate, you know thousands of people actually just hang out for this episode specifically whenever you're on. Do you know that?
No, I don't know that. You don't give me the metrics, so... No, that's really good. I mean, my angle here would be that we're helping people out, providing knowledge so that they can make good property decisions. So hopefully it helps everyone out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess when you're thinking about analysing the Perth market, it's the least niched. We're not talking specifically about Armidale or Willoughby or Morley or Joondalup. This is a broad conversation about the temperature on the ground, where the price points are at, and where the opportunities are at. You can't get that from a suburb update specifically when you're thinking broadly investing in WA. This is the episode today where whether you're a WA investor, WA owner-occupier looking to buy, or an East Coast investor, this is that episode that people look out for every 3 months to just understand what's happening right now. Is it still a good time to get in, or is the arm's length valuer, who very much is as unbiased as can be, calling it time?
Trent, one thing that we've been calling out in this market is to essentially ignore those average stats. So Perth has leapt out in terms of some of the stats recently, but essentially the market is moving so quickly at the moment that those stats become irrelevant over a really fast period of time. So in a sector of the market, we're in a boom at this point in time. And so when you look from a distance and the statistics are saying that the median house price has gone up by 10% or it's gone up by 1% in a month, they've become really irrelevant, in particular in what we're probably calling the impact zone. And that would be a value range between about $400,000 and $800,000 is absolutely booming, maybe out of control at this point in time. And those stats become less relevant in this marketplace.
So you call it the impact zone. I would call it the affordability zone.
Yep.
The market when all of them can afford really this price point, or the majority of people. Now it just comes down to a relationship between the amount of people and the amount of properties on the market.
Yep.
You get above that, it then starts to come down to people being able to afford certain socioeconomic quadrants.
Interestingly, if you go and have a look at the median rent in Perth for a 4-bedroom house, that's about $650 a week at this point in time.
Was $354 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's $35,000 per annum. If you go plug that into an affordability calculator in terms of getting a home loan, you can go and spend somewhere between, depending on your deposit, obviously. It could be as low as $350, could be out to $500,000. Essentially, we're talking about people coming out of the rental market and trying to get into the capital value market in an affordability zone.
Given we're talking about this impact zone, and that's where we're clearly seeing most of the movement, the hot source in the market right now, do you have any concerns about the viability of those price points? Or do you look at it and go, well, Trent, every single property we're looking at and valuing has got 15 offers, and the one who won by $3,000. How can we have concern about this price point? Which side of the equation are you on right now?
Probably the concerning bit to cover off on that first is that we are seeing people offer above the listing price really consistently. And we've just got, you know, I do a few presentations around town, and the examples in those are locations like Baldivis, Seville Grove, Gosnells, and buyers are offering 15 to 20% above the listing price, okay? And so essentially that means there's a lot of competition. Now, that's not a massive concern. We're not going to say that that's not market value, because there is competition there and there is market.
Heaps of offers at
yeah,
that price.
Yeah, there's a lot of offers. What does concern me is the price zone. So essentially we're going from affordable price at about $500 to $550, and you're working up into the $600 to $650 zone really quickly. So essentially that changes in a weekend in the market at the minute. So if you think about, say, January, that product is essentially selling for $550,000. That's the listing price. That's the transaction price.
First week this year.
Yeah, exactly. Now here we are in to the middle of March, end of March, and we're sitting around that same property being worth $650,000 now. So that leap concerns me in terms of the sustainability of that for that suburb going into the future.
You know what we've consistently seen, though, you and I have seen this over the last 5.5 years on this podcast, is that the first 3 months of the year since 2019, there has always been a step change in price. And then we've seen a moderation over winter, slight pickup through spring, even though they call it spring selling season. It's not like the price has really rocketed in that time.
Yep.
Christmas, everyone has their New Year's resolutions again, and then bang, second week of January, price just spikes up again.
Yeah.
Whilst it is noticeable that we have seen material price growth again for the fourth year in a row in this January, February, March space, history has shown us that it has started to moderate for whatever reason. One, it might be perspective on affordability. Two, it might be there was still excessive supply at that time. Three, interest rates were rising considerably throughout, for example, last year.
Yeah.
This year, what do you think about that? We're talking about interest rates dropping.
To pick up on your first point, the affordability bit is potentially what happens here in terms of people going, oh, hang on, I can't afford that suburb anymore. So then they go and look in the next most affordable suburb down the line. So then we're getting into projections for the rest of the year. Mm. So clearly we're expecting interest rates to potentially go down at the end of the year. There's plenty of commentators talking about September, October, November timeframe. It's really interesting to pause and think about spring selling season that hasn't been strong for the last two springs, in my opinion.
Essentially agreeing with what you're saying. Yeah.
Yep. And essentially what the market started doing in Perth is waiting till the new year to make property decisions and trying to catch up with the market. So this year, do we go back to that traditional spring selling season or purchase season? Because essentially there should be a whole lot of noise around interest rates going down at that point in time.
Yeah, I think expectation as well. We often see it's not the material outcomes that affect decision making, Brendan. It's expectations of what's about to happen.
Essentially, I think that's what's happening above the million. Probably draw a line in the sand around the million and a half price point. Essentially, that sector of the market is being relatively cautious at this point in time. They're still gaining confidence in the idea that interest rates have peaked, and they're still thinking about, okay, so if interest rates have peaked, what am I going to do next? Have I made some capital value out of my property? In particular, they've got a problem about what they would buy next, i.e. the upgrade property is not really available at this point in time. And they're also waiting to really get over that confidence line of going, okay, I am now confident that interest rates will potentially fall at the end of the year.
When we think about the dynamics in this affordability impact zone that we're talking about, you've referenced the market just now nearly accepting that if a property is on the market for 470, it will probably need an offer of 550 to get close to winning it. And that wouldn't guarantee it. We've heard from Mark Grogan, for example, he specifically referenced that in his podcast only a few weeks ago.
Yep.
You're saying you're seeing it all the time. Would there be any indication here that agents should really just start catching up on what they're listing it for? Are they underlisting properties?
Potentially, because the market is moving so quickly, you can't really blame the agent for potentially not being quite right up to the money. The fear comes in for the agent there too. They don't want to be the first agent that lists at that higher number and then misses out. Mm. They're kind of mainlining a little bit in terms of that turnover.
Well, they always say list it low, watch it grow.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not fantastic code of conduct either.
No, exactly. So I would imagine we'll see them catch up a bit. You're also in this listing zone, in terms of that impact zone, they will be really conscious of making sure that the headline or the marketing number is in a impact zone for the affordable buyer. So I would expect that they'll try and keep those listing prices constrained at this point in time. The other factor here is we move back to that zone where the median house price catches up to new levels of record activity. So whilst we're in the midst of this, it is all relatively shocking in terms of new numbers coming at us for suburbs where, in particular as valuers, we stand back and have to really consider, is this suburb actually got values that stack up at that level? Essentially, we move on a little bit, all the sales evidence settles down, we start analysing those sales regularly. As an example, at the moment, if we were trying to use sales evidence from November and December for valuations that we're doing in January, February, March, those sales are not relevant
anymore.
You'd
be reject those contracts every day of the week.
Yeah, it's essentially too old, and we need to use even more current sales and obviously talk to agents to...
It's hard to not have bias, though. When you think about your cohort of valuers that are employed by you, most of their lived experience would be a very stagnant view of what Armidale's worth, of what Byford's worth, of what's Canningvale worth, what's Morley worth, within a $100,000 range.
Yep.
We've now seen material seismic shifts in that that probably aren't going to go back to that point in the next cycle. Even when it dips down, we've probably moved to a next plateau of prices, and it makes it hard, I think, for a valuer who's still a human to look at these prices, even have all this data in front of them, and still not go, 500 grand in Armidale, are you serious?
Yeah.
It's hard to move past that if you're not a computer.
Yeah, absolutely. And to get some perspective there, we were doing that on the way down. I remember one of our valuers coming back to the office to have a chat about some mortgagee in possession valuations we were doing. He was essentially about to value it for less than $200,000 at that point in the cycle in the market, and really came back to the office to have a face-to-face chat with us to say, are we happy that this is the zone we're in? And now on the way back up, they're the similar conversations we're having. Is that property now essentially doubled, nearly tripled in value? And the fact is that demand and supply in the market say that that's where we're at this point in the cycle.
If we think about the risks involved in this market at the moment, it's very hard for me to point to any micro risks given the demand and supply space. We're still sitting between 900 and 1100 transactions a week, well above the mining boom. We're still sitting around 4,000 properties on the market right now, not even close to a comparison to anything we've seen in history per capita.
Yep.
So there's no conversation there on the micro dynamics. Of course, there will, from a micro perspective, be significant growth out of these numbers. There's no other way around it in that space. But from a macro perspective, when you speak to some of the leaders in business and industry around the lunch table and the luncheons you must go to, Brendan.
So many luncheons, mate.
Is there any concern from the big guys in town about how the macro space, let's say China and steel, iron ore prices, may have on the efficacy of our industry, which then obviously affects our population, which affects the dynamics on a micro level? Are people materially looking and nervous about these things, or are they more like, mate, we're so knackered here, even if you did drop the price to $80 an iron ore, the furnaces are still on, we're still pumping away, and there's still people coming in every day of the week anyway, and even if they didn't, we've still got 2 or 3 years of houses to build for the people we've got.
It's really interesting to watch this unfold, Trent, in terms of some of those significant world events, you know, what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening in Ukraine, and then clearly the correction in China in terms of property market as well as their commodities market.
US election.
The US election's really scary. So essentially, we seem to be really insulated by that at this point in time. I think our market has taken confidence from the fact that nothing has changed significantly with those events happening over the last year to 18 months.
Despite what the bears would have expected.
Yeah, exactly. And then we've had some really local shocks, in particular, you think through lithium and nickel in terms of what's happened in that market space. I do think that that is affecting the top end of our property market at the moment. There seems to be a little bit less speculative activity and a bit less prestige property changing hands. There is a little bit around that, but I think essentially below $1 million, we're back to those local market factors that are driving
the micro market.
Exactly.
There.
So the micro market comes back in. Now, for perspective, if everyone wants to think about what happened in the GFC, whilst we watched the rest of the world melt down, the West Australian economy was going through another powerhouse growth phase at that point in time. And it took a good 2 years for that GFC to come through and hit the West Australian market. I'm not saying that we didn't get affected, because we did, and we went through a correction in our market as a result. But at this point in time, it would seem that we're insulated from those world events and those macroeconomic activities.
We're talking about prices compressing up. In the same way that we see the ripple effect from the smart money moving first, as we've always said on this podcast, from your Cottesloe all the way down, it's finally hit Armidale, right? 6 years later.
Yep.
Given it's compressing up and up and up from affordability, it starts to get to a point where it's pushing those properties up, that now your Southern River is at $800,000.
Yep.
Well, what else could you have bought for $800,000? Well, it could have been Riverton. It could have been Bull Creek, Leeming, these areas, right?
Yep.
People start to go, well, hang on a second. Why am I paying $800,000 in Southern River when I could be in Bull Creek, Leeming, these sort of areas,
yep,
right? Surely we start to see the tide go back out that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so push the prices up from the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that we've flipped cycles a little bit here. So we had top-down growth in the past, in that previous cycle where we corrected the decline in values. And now we're going back to the traditional cycle of essentially bottom-up. So effectively, if you track it right back, it's vacancy rate in the rental market, rents going up, pressure on people, therefore, to either increase their rental or look at their other options, i.e. go and buy a house of their own, because it's actually a more affordable option and makes a lot more sense going forward. And then that ripple effect starts to work up from the bottom end of the price point in our market to the top end. So what we'll see as we go forward in this year is essentially people taking the price growth or the capital value growth and essentially the wealth they've created out of a house that they might have bought in the last 12 months to 2 years. We've got lots of examples around of people making a couple of $100,000 on a, say, a mid-300s buy, selling out at mid-500s now. If it's the principal place of residence, they've cleared.
That's your $20,000 deposit to go into a million-dollar house if you want.
Exactly. So as long as their income stream's going okay and healthy and they maintain their employment, all those kinds of things, then I would expect human nature says that that person is going to scale up to an aspirational property, cross the river, cross the railway line, the highway, get closer to the lifestyle property that they desire. Mm. The higher end of the market will follow up and obviously values continue to grow up.
And the thing that I'm foreshadowing here is that the timing of this wealth effect starting to finally come into Perth for the first time in over a decade is the timing when we're expecting interest rates to start dropping by the end of the year and making that even easier to do.
Yep.
That's where I start to see an alignment with the middle of the market, let's call it, starting to get a bit more traction back, because it's probably come out of fourth gear into third gear between a mil and 2.5 mil, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So probably caution listeners to just, if you're in that marketplace at this point in time, there's not a lot of choice out there. There is still a really restricted supply in the market. So I would caution patience, have a look around and see what's available. Take your time, because the property that you want to buy, the aspirational property or the perfect property, either isn't out there or it's not on the market at this point in time. So there's a real frustration in that marketplace above about a mil and a half. Be cautious that you don't go bumble into something and pay too much for it at this point in time, because you're listening to us talk about the impact zone and you think that, okay, the market's going crazy. The stats say that the median house price is going up. I better go and buy something. Just stop for a second, smell the roses and just check out whether there is competition for the property that you're looking to buy. On the flip side of that is you might need to make things happen. So if you want to upgrade it in this market, you would need to go and talk to your local agent, I would say. I'm thinking about selling my house because I want to get into that suburb over there. That agent is going to do everything they can to try and help you out because they want your listing.
Well, they need the listing.
And so things will happen in the background. Just let people know what you would like to do. Obviously, you would like to maintain some confidentiality, but it's really difficult to upgrade and churn in this market, and so you'll need to talk to people.
You would agree then, you're on the same train with me, that whilst we're in the middle of the boom zone right now, below a mil and a half, we're probably at 7 o'clock in the middle of the market, and that we're probably going to expect that run on the middle of the market to probably start up again by the end of the year, based on the wealth effect and probably dropping interest rates. Would you be on the same page with me on that?
Yeah. So
you'd buy now, wouldn't you, if you could try and get into these markets?
Yeah, absolutely you would. The problem is the availability. Mm. So that's why we're not seeing that the price growth, because there's not the product available for people to go to choose from. So the only caution, I would keep that same caution through into the spring selling season. If we don't get listings in that upgrade buyer market or the mil and a half plus market, then we potentially just don't see growth because there's a stagnation in the market. So we don't get the churn and essentially the market stays stagnated. Mm. I would expect that somewhere along the line here, as money gets cheaper, people will start to look at those options and they say, well, let's see what I can do next. One of the quirky ideas here is that because we haven't been building a lot of new product over the last couple of years and it became really expensive to build, maybe those upgrade options aren't as good as they could have been. And then one more factor that you and I have talked about over a long period of time is apartment market and those apartments finishing. So just as a case example, let's think about the Grove in the border of Peppermint Grove and Claremont there being finished Blackburn product. So as that finishes in the next month or two, and then over that month or two after that, those people start moving in. If they're owner occupiers, what are they selling? You might know off the top of your head, Trent, is there 250 odd apartments in that building? I know some of them will be investment.
200 to 300, something like that. Yeah.
So it's a lot of property and a lot of people. Some of them will obviously be investment product. But if you say that 150 of those are owner occupiers, suddenly there's going to be 150 houses through the western suburbs and that general catchment area come to the market in the next 6 months or so.
So there's increased supply. And normally when you see increased supply, steady demand, a softening. Yep. But are you seeing, well, we're finally going to see some data here as to where the market's going?
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not all going to come on at exactly the same time.
No, exactly. So obviously everyone has a different circumstances. People will rent out the property. They might give it to that kid, something. And the quality of that product might be everything from land value through to luxury home. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. We've seen this happen in little microcosms of the market in the past, and essentially each individual make their decision about when to sell at different points in time.
Having covered that increase in value in the impact zone, the affordability zone we're talking about here, We're now starting to recognize a bit more parity occurring between the established market finally and the house and land aggregate cost.
Yeah.
For 2 or 3 years there, the established market, let's say for the house in Southern River, was 600 grand, but to buy a piece of land and build a new property was 750.
Yep.
So not many people are making that decision.
Yeah.
We're starting to see a lot more data, especially coming out in the paper and coming out of CoreLogic, Rewa, that a lot more blocks of land are starting to sell now.
Yeah.
What are absolutely. You seeing?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things going on here. Essentially, land value selling and therefore going up. Someone mentioned to me the other day that Baldivis land value is going up for the first time in 7 or 8 years or so. There's been a massive oversupply of land through that really big suburb over a long period of time. So price increases have been very minimal. That indicates to me that if values are going up or prices are increasing in there and the value is sustained, that we're on an upward cycle in the construction market. Something that we need to be cautious of is that we still have a restricted supply of new homes. So essentially, all new home builders can only sell a certain amount of dwellings each month. So
they're being restricted by their bosses.
Yeah, yeah. So they have
literally the owners of these building companies are saying no more.
Yeah, and so they're trying to protect their brand name and a fact. Essentially,
well, they don't want to be in the same spot as 4 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. So they've seen how pear-shaped it can go when you oversell at the front door and trying to get the production line going out the back door and the capacity to try and build. They're really conscious of the fact that we just do not have enough trades in Perth, in particular Perth Metro, and then obviously out into the regions as well to construct the demand that's coming through the front door. So we need to remember that as we talk this through, i.e. that there's a slight restriction on the number of houses that can be built. Not slight, it's quite rigorous restriction. There is land available, but developers aren't pushing it out of the ground as fast as possible. We're not in a boom situation there where they're going to create supply hand over fist and pump it into the marketplace. They're creating a certain amount of supply at the right price at the right time, and they're selling it into the marketplace.
You know what I'm also seeing from that perspective? It might seem like land developers are holding supply of land back to meet certain price points and restrict supply. What I'm actually seeing on the ground is the big guys. They want to move,
yep,
but they're held up because a sewer has not been approved, or dewatering costs, pushing a sewer 2 kilometers through the suburb to be able to service these blocks.
Yep.
The civil contractors who are the ones actually going out there with a front end loader and a bobcat can't get to site. I'll be there in 6 months.
Yep.
So they're ready, sitting there on land, paying massive interest costs, want to be able to get these blocks to market and sell them, cash out, make some money.
Yep.
They can't because they're being held up by the industry as well. It's not only the builders that are restricting supply of house and land, it's the civil contractors and the government workers who are putting the services in who yep. are restricting the land developers from providing the land.
I know you've talked about in the past, but the Western Power situation in yep. terms of connecting to individual dwellings to power is a massive issue in some suburbs. And again, we just get back to the capacity of workers. Doesn't matter where they work, whether in the water system or the power system. If you can't supply the infrastructure, then you can't supply the land.
We just don't have enough tradies to supply the yep. amount of houses we need, houses or apartments we need at the price we need as well
yep.
For the market of people we've got. Somehow we've imported way too many IT professionals and accountants and people who are just useless with a hammer. That's just, it seems like that's the fact, right?
Yeah. Maybe they've got the same handyman skills
people like
as
us,
me, mate.
Yeah. Frank. Yeah.
What we'll see as the year goes forward is a flip back to construction being the most affordable option in our marketplace. Mm. We're seeing in some suburbs at the minute, as a case example, we've just seen an established dwelling sale in Bullsbrook in the new subdivision out there.
Who would have thought, by the way?
$710,000, which we then go back to what you were talking about before. So what are your other options? Just bear in mind for a minute that that's a 5x2 house on a 600 odd square meter block. It's a 278 square meter living area dwelling. So someone's obviously seen the value in that in terms of paying 710. The previous time it transacted was about 535, I think, off the top of my head. Then you go, well, back to your point, what can I get closer to the city in established older stock for that $710,000? So I'd encourage people to consider those options.
You could be
future.
Through Belden, some of Craigie now, which yep. is crazy to think. Wanneroo, all the way through there, you can go as close as Westminster, Balga, Nollamara, Greenwood, Girraween, Kundalla, Mirrabooka, Morley, Beachbra. There's a lot of suburbs there where you can have a big 1980s 4x1, possibly 4x2 home for less than $700,000 still.
And then the other thing I'd argue is that if you go to that same subdivision in Bullsbrook, you potentially can still buy the block of land and get a construction contract that would be similar numbers to that or less, and then you get to choose all the finishes. Clearly, you have to wait, but the scenario there is that should be relatively same price or cheaper than buying that established dwelling.
Yeah, so I think that dynamic's finally starting to swing back.
Yeah.
Maybe it takes a bit of pressure off the established market. I don't think so. I think it just gives people who are losing in the established market time and time again an avenue to actually have some options, which will take a couple of years to fulfill from first contract to moving in the front door.
Yep.
Apartments, are you seeing anything moving at all from an apartment perspective? I'm not seeing a lot coming out of the ground. There's a couple of projects, Subiaco, for example, Richard Pappas at Celsius has got one going up, a little bit of movement in Como as well.
Yep.
Obviously, Finbar's finishing their massive Civic Heart, and we've got, I think it's The Point in Burswood as well.
Yep.
But other than that...
Yeah, groundworks on the dunes at Scarborough.
Yes, good one. Yep, Scarborough's coming up. There's a few couple of DAs that have just come in with Gary Dempsey, but that's not to suggest that's going to come out of the ground anytime soon.
Yep.
What are we seeing?
In terms of that new stock and trying to buy off the plan, I think that's still really difficult. The feasibility in terms of construction costs on any apartment complex at this point in time is still very difficult to work. The good news, though, in terms of potentially creating the feasibility for those complexes, is I checked in with our team, in particular, number one tallest valuer in Perth, Tristan Vanderlind, from our team. He looks after the apartment market through...
Good Dutch name.
Good Dutch name. He looked after the apartment through the inner city or CBD type market. I just sent him a text saying, tell me what's going on, and I'm going to quote him. Anything under 500K is going mental. There you go. So
investor stock, first-time buyer stock, second-hand.
Yeah, and so essentially people working out of those single residential dwelling price range and median house price range and going, okay, well, I'll buy into the apartment market.
You can't build a new apartment for those prices, though.
Yeah, exactly. So why I mention that is that so the developers of those sites will be looking at those established apartment values and waiting for those to go up to a certain level on rate per square meter, probably needs to get to $11,000, $12,000 a square metre to make it viable for them to build their new product. And so those rates per square metre are getting there in terms of the established apartment in the existing market.
That's really hard for the market to swallow, though. I remember 5 years ago doing a feasibility on an apartment development in Netherlands and struggling to justify $8,000 a square metre in Netherlands.
Yeah, yeah.
How absolutely. Are we going to justify $10,000, $11,000 in Maylands, Rivervale, Bayswater, Cannington?
Yeah, and so what we are still looking at in terms of those feasibilities are do they get to 10, but then construction costs have gone up to 5 or 6. You haven't bought your land yet. Is that gap enough of a gap to make the complex feasible? And I know people out there would be thinking, oh, the developer will just have to suck that up and get on with it. They're not going to do that unless they make a profit. We do not create supply into our marketplace unless it makes sense. And interestingly, a few of the approvals that we've seen recently in the news have government assistance, because that's the only way that we can make it viable.
John Kerry is literally building his own apartment blocks because that's the only way he can get the numbers out of the ground.
Yeah.
And you know what? I actually don't disagree with it.
Yeah.
If the government, with all their billions of dollars, want to go build some apartment buildings that are of good standard spec in areas that we can put people in of all colours of the world, why not?
Yeah, I think that model got broken down over a period of time. And
well, that's why we're in this problem in the first place, because they stopped doing it.
Yeah. And so for whatever reason, it evolved into a situation that it was unworkable or it was not good policy or...
Just not good business, probably.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the problem. When you're in a tight situation in government, there's nothing in the budget, there's no real housing crisis issue, prices are depressed. Yeah, maybe it is tough to justify continually building this stuff on a cyclical basis. What we've seen from a long term is that that has caused massive issues in not having the trade base to scale up, because we have peaks and troughs that are not supported in the downturn by government construction in social housing. But also, because of that, we're now in a space where we don't have the capabilities from apartment built developers in the first place. And in addition, we're in this position because the government has stopped with that baseline years ago, right? So I would be a big supporter of the government putting in a policy, given the fact they've got a few billion dollars spare every year at the moment, thanks to McGowan's GST deal.
Yep.
Thanks for coming. Every year, build 1,000 apartments.
Yep.
Keeps tradies busy, even when it starts to turn down, and it keeps that social housing pipeline into the future, so we never have to worry about this again.
Thinking about this issue over a period of time, that's where I landed as well, Trent. The government through up and down cycle, peak and trough, just have to create X number of dwellings, whether it be single residential or apartments.
At a loss, at a profit, whatever.
Yeah, every single year. And, you know, the travesty here is that when the building community was, you know, remember we were talking about the brickies that couldn't get a job and those kinds of things.
They left.
They either left town or changed trades or that's found something
why we're
else
in this
to do,
position now.
Went to the mines, whatever the situation is. What we should have been doing, and I know this is so much easier said than done, but it would have been great if we had been able to say to those people, look, just go and spec build 1,000 dwellings out there wherever they are and we guarantee that we'll buy them off you at market value once you're completed. It would have been fantastic.
Yeah, or government sponsor in the first place. The government is the developer and they're giving these guys run-of-the-mill work to smash out in urban infill areas and actually getting this infill done in the first place.
Yep.
They're the government. They're the ones who control the policies of the planning space. They don't have any of the planning risk that the rest of us have to deal with. They can create the planning space and then go and get these apartment builds done and don't do them a Brownlee Towers like they were 50 years ago. Do them in a way where everyone benefits and everyone wants to live there.
Yeah, and that becomes that debate around design and planning and where you put them and that kind of stuff. That's really difficult, but I would have thought that we were at a stage in our marketplace and the maturity of our city that we can start to solve those issues. Trent, the other thing that could happen here is that because of the median density codes and the change to planning laws around granny flats is that we have some other opportunities to create supply into our marketplace. So just encouraging listeners to think about what they could do next. If you think about the spare land in the backyard, there might be an opportunity for a family to essentially create a first home opportunity. So that could be a granny flat type situation in the backyard. Listeners have got to remember that that's not a super cheap option. So a one bedroom or two bedroom granny flat constructed correctly in the backyard could still cost $250,000. But essentially what you're thinking about here is that if it's the family home and you're helping your family member into maybe their first home or the flip side, their last home, then potentially if you stand back from it, you're getting the land for free. You've always owned the land. You're taking out that cost and creating some sort of accommodation. I think that people need to get the perspective that that's how desperate we are in this marketplace. Mm. We really need to look at lots of other options. If you think through the idea that if we had have created this 5 years ago, independent living options in the backyards of all of the spare land around Perth, then potentially we have a huge supply of extra bedrooms that then solves the rental crisis and the capital value pressure that we've got at this point in time.
It opens a brand new subsector of our construction market as well. It would mainly probably, I would think, be all steel fabrication, prefab stuff. And there are green shoots in this market. Yep. There's a few companies trying to sell their wares in this space, but not really convincing the market.
Yep.
I feel like this will probably be the watershed moment where a brand new industry of prefab home builders starts to come out in this tiny home space, flat space, because we're just making it that much easier to fulfill. And I agree with you. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the idea of housing your grandparents or the parents in the backyard. You can keep the trees in the backyard. Great way to do it without subdividing and dropping the trees. And also you can stay connected to them. It gives you that variety of housing typology that we sorely lack in WA.
Yeah. And so when you look at people are making decisions about where they're going to live and their location ideas and those kinds of things, a lot of it's got to do with family. When you look overseas as well, in particular through Europe, they have multi-generational living through similar dwellings, and in particular in mainland Europe. This is that similar idea of saying, okay, well, if you want to stay close to the parents, maybe in some cases a little bit too close, but then we get back to affordability and go, okay, if we create this space, this gets us a leg up in terms of creating somewhere for people to live. Maybe we can save a bit of rent or something over a period of time. We're still creating some sort of value amongst the family unit, and that might help us get further into the property market and maintain our wealth creation into
I agree.
The future.
Yep. There's zero downsides to this. I'm interested to see how well it's picked up by the market.
Yep.
I don't think the market has a real understanding of this has even come out.
Yep.
So it'll have to be pushed by people who are going to make a buck out of this.
Yep.
There needs to be an industry being built out of these prefab granny flat homes saying, guys, guess what? You should all know, just like the solar panel people, this is now happening. You can do this and there's no problem. It's going to be a lot easier than it used to be.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to come out to the market.
Yeah, absolutely. And so everyone needs to remember that this isn't a price point. The sell is not that it's cheap. It's not. It's still going to cost a fair amount of money to get this done correctly. Speed here is probably the idea. So you could potentially have a semi-prefab or a prefab product put in the backyard within 6 months to 12 months, as opposed to waiting for 12 to 18 months for a single residential dwelling in an outer suburb.
Awesome chat, Brendo. Let's summarise this one over a couple of minutes
yep.
in terms of our views on how things are going to go for the rest of the year and the factors impacting why.
Let's just start on the basics. Supply and demand. Supply is still really restricted. Demand is still through the roof.
Historically, so, both sides historically critical.
Yeah, exactly. And so when we go to the single residential dwelling numbers in terms of what's available for you to go shopping tomorrow, 2,000 houses on the market. I keep using this scenario in my presentations. If that was Woolworths or Coles and you walked in the door and there was less than a third the stock that usually is on the shelves, the world would be going crazy out there. And that's what's in the market there in terms of single residential dwellings at this point in time. So that doesn't get fixed overnight. We're not creating a whole lot of supply that creates 6,000 houses.
Let's be frank. It doesn't get fixed this year.
Yep.
It doesn't get fixed next year.
No.
We don't have a crystal ball after that, but we know that problem is not fixed in 2024 or 2025. Yep. And from an apartment space, which is still a massive gap, it's not fixed in 26
yep.
or 27.
Yeah, absolutely. So we go back to that feasibility discussion. So supply remains restricted. Demand remains high. The only thing that I can see that might change there is just that population growth. But I'm super confident that we will continue to have population pressure on WA economy going forward because we've created jobs here. That leads to that next situation or next factor that we would look at, and that would be unemployment. So one of the lead indicators of what we would look at as to whether the market's going to change into the near future is if unemployment dramatically starts edging upwards in Perth, we're really confident that it will stay low into the future at this point in time.
Okay, let's think about the price point now pushing the investor mix in and out of the market, right? So investors are here, especially the ones from the East Coast who are the early entrants into the WA investor market because they love the yield. I asked this question to Shane Bowen. I said, is there a price where people just start not seeing value? He said, mate, the rental market in Goulburn is going to keep running. It's going to keep going up. The yield is still far higher than anything in the East Coast, right? That's Goulburn. Across the board in WA, though, you'd expect that at some point in time, as Perth's market continues to grow relative to the rest of the country, the perception of value and it being cheap to those people from Melbourne and Sydney and Queensland starts to ebb away a little bit. Do we see a retraction of East Coast investors? And as an extension of that, given the wealth effect that's now starting to be created in WA and the confidence and a bit of FOMO, do we have enough WA investors to fill that space?
It's interesting to watch the participation of buyer agents in this upward cycle. They were in our market really early. They were the ones that were talking about the affordability of Armidale. They probably didn't have, let's say, the stigma attached to it in terms of being a Perth local and understanding the socioeconomic background of Armidale and its distance from the city and those kinds of things that a Perth local would be attached to. East Coast buyers came through and said, this is really affordable, it's really cheap, it's really rentable, you're going to get a great return, and they got a great capital growth out of it. And they were correct. They picked a really good sector of the market that we were probably a little bit too close to see. So what we now see in that cycle in terms of buyer agents coming from the East Coast is potentially they start saying, look, that's not affordable anymore. That's not the price point that we want you to be at. The only factor I've got there is that we think about the monopoly situation here, and by that I mean those investors from the East Coast are coming to buy their most recent investment property in WA because they already hold the set that says, I own Melbourne, I own Hobart, I own Sydney, and I own Brisbane. I'm completing the set. I've got my whole monopoly set organised here. I've got Perth now too. So that may continue to drive it. The other part is if we've gone through the $600,000 mark, they might go looking elsewhere, go back to the Sydney apartment market, probably go to the Brisbane apartment market with the Olympics coming there in the future, those kinds of ideas. And so they get distracted and walk away. I think that our local investors have been really late into this market. They've come into our market at the back end of this year.
They're only just getting in, Brendo.
Yeah, exactly. They're just being cautious and disbelieving of the hype potentially. So I think part of that will fill the gap. The other part that would fill the gap if East Coast investors walked away at this point in time is just owner-occupiers coming out of their rentals that are really expensive and into their principal place of residence.
So we're not really concerned about the buyer pool materially dropping throughout the year as the prices continue to rise.
I'm confident that we'll continue to have that pressure on the supply as we go forward this year.
2 years ago, people thought I made a pretty ballsy comment where the median house price was 500 grand in Perth, and I said, we'll definitely get to $700,000 in this cycle. We're halfway there. Are we going to get there?
Yeah, we'll absolutely get there because essentially we've already seen that in those prices that we were talking about before, where people are going to offer 15 to 20% above the current listing.
Yep.
As the bottom end of the market churns upwards, so 550 is now 600 to 650, we're getting closer to just pushing that median house price up consistently every single month.
So that's a big call from the MD of Heron Torb White, who has confidence in that market, right? I remember there was a much more conservative view from you years ago now, and you've clearly, you don't want to be wrong. You don't want to be biased in being inflationary, but you also don't want to be that guy who's getting it wrong the other way, which is what you've spoken about your staff too, right? So it gives me a lot of confidence to hear that in that space. I would suggest that this is the mindset that people need to recognize now in WA, because people have learned this lesson a long time ago on the East Coast and brought that here and made a bit of money already.
Yep.
I got some good money off of our property. The people who are winning the most at the moment are people who are holding property that they've had for years.
Yep.
The next best people, the one who have just got in the market.
Yeah, yeah.
Well done to you.
Yep.
The people who are losing are the ones who are not in this market.
Yep.
You are falling behind.
Yeah, so you just need to be really wary when you're out looking at property that you've got to be prepared to follow the market upwards because it's going upwards. Don't stand out and think that it's going to collapse this year or next year. It's not going to collapse.
Brendan Ptolemy, Managing Director of Heron Torb White. We love having you on. Look forward to speaking to you about the regional market sometime soon.
Thanks, Trent. Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Perth Property Show. If you've only just joined the conversation, you can catch up by heading over to our website, perthpropertyshow.com.au, subscribing to the podcast, or joining our Facebook page. Don't forget to tune in next Monday at 7 a.m. for more expert insights, local analysis, and suburb spotlights. Happy hunting!